and welcome to the OMFIF podcast, a weekly discussion on key trends in investment and economic policy from some of the world's leading commentators. On this week's episode, we talk about the implications of euro area slowdown at a time of high public debt. This is Ellie Groves from London, and today we talk to Wilhelm Buter, Special Economic Advisor at Citi. Thank you for joining us today. So first question is, the ECB cut its forecast for growth in the 19-member single currency area this year by 10 base points to 1.1% and 20 base points to 1.2% for 2020. What do you think the key implications are of this euro area slowdown at the same time as the high public debt? Diving straight in for the wider question here.
Yes, well, I think we'd be lucky if the slowdown is restricted to this 10 basis points in 2020 and 20 basis points in 2021. It could well be larger if we don't get the right policy response. But clearly the implication of this slowdown and the systematic undershooting of the inflation target is that expansionary monetary policy will continue to be on the table and implemented in an open-ended manner. And the pressure for additional fiscal stimulus will only increase.
Thank you. It would be interesting to, before we get on to the conversations in a little bit more detail about the monetary policy tools and also fiscal policy taking the reins potentially, but also it'd be interesting to dive into the global factors of the euro area slowdown. What is the role of the US-China trade conflict, for example, and also widening that question, the implication of Trump now focusing potentially his trade dispute towards Europe, especially following his tweet, which, you know, how much store do we put in a tweet, but also the maneuvers he's been making and the noises he's been making around the euro area.
Yes, there's been some direct impact of the trade conflict between the US and China on European exports, especially in Germany, possibly also in Italy. But the main impact, I think, has been through attitude towards risk, lack of optimism, and business conservatism that it inspires, and consequent weakness in investment demand, especially. We are not seeing any material impact yet on domestically generated demand, especially in the services sector. But there is no doubt that the global kerfuffle between the US and China, and the risk now that there will be an intensification of this trade dispute between the US and Europe, that these things have damaged the external environment within which Europe operates. Yes, but domestically generated demand, while reasonable, is also not spectacular. It isn't just the external environment that's weakening. There is a distinct lack of dynamism also in domestic demand.
I think, from my understanding, over the last few months, the domestic demand has been the key driver of keeping kind of the European countries out of a technical recession. And so I think it will be very interesting to see the potential implications of the uncertainty a trade war could bring. I think that point around the lack of optimism and conservative business practices, and actually it being more an implication from perception, it is very interesting. You see it, to use that terrible word as well, Brexit, but the perception of what might happen and the uncertainty of what might happen being a driving force. Is that a fair assessment?
That is absolutely, absolutely fair. Pervasive uncertainty about the global trade environment, and then more regionally important, the prospects of a messy no-deal Brexit and the risk of that are definitely depressing aggregate demand in the UK and in the rest of the EU.
So we will have to hold on to that. We might be able to get you back and discuss that in further detail once there is some clarity potentially over either of those. I want to now actually I want to now actually move on to the thoughts on the ECB announcement on the 12th of September. So as you alluded to earlier, this was this saw an expansion of monetary policy, the cutting the deposit rates to negative, so to negative 0.5. And we saw another round of QE with the ECB's pledge to buy 20 billion euro of new debt each month. I think I've also seen somewhere that this is potentially less than the markets were expecting, but it's still led Draghi to kind of make a quite strong statement saying negative rates will not provoke the collapse of the financial system. But do you think that kind of we can continue with the expansion of monetary policy, or will it at some point potentially run out of road?
Well, we're not at a run out of road yet. In terms of the ability to expand the balance sheet. I mean, the Japanese are sitting on a central bank balance sheet that is 100% of annual GDP. Now, Europe is trying to make it to 40. So we've got quite a bit of room to go there if you're willing to expand the asset menu sufficiently. But the effectiveness of these monetary policy measures, with the deposit rate now at minus 50 basis points and very close to the effective lower bound. And with QE now about to resume in November at the rate of slightly disappointing, actually, 20 billion a month only, but in an open-ended manner. Even more important, I think, in terms of whatever stimulus can be provided by monetary policy, was this forward guidance. And the emphasis of the fact that not just actual inflation, but also measures of underlying inflation, inflation expectations, medium and long term, have to be at target for the ECB to consider abandoning its expansionary stance. So I think the forward guidance was very dovish indeed. And in addition, there were some measures with the targeted longer term refinancing operations, the TLTRO operations, to make lending more attractive to banks, especially important to banks in the South. And the pain of the further cut in deposit rates being mitigated by increasing, by tiering, basically exempting part of excess reserves from this minus 50 basis points requirement. So it is a seriously expansionary package, but the impact will be minimal unless you get fiscal policy on board, because the transmission from asset markets, where the ECB still has some effect, to the real economy is very limited and not adequate to prevent the further slowdown by itself.
I think that was something that Mr. Draghi was very unequivocal about as well, around the fiscal policy needs to be engaged with and that monetary policy can only go so far. It would be interesting to kind of hear your views on, do you see this as a possibility? Do you see either the national governments within the euro area taking on the fiscal policies that are potentially needed? Or do you see a chance of fiscal integration across Europe? For example, the passing of a European budget and moving towards even a fiscal union. We obviously have a monetary union, but can one last without the other?
Well, as regards fiscal union or even a central European level countercyclical fiscal entity, from your mouth, from my mouth to God's ear, it would be great, but it's not going to happen. The climate, political climate of opinion, is simply not in favor of deepening financial integration, even after Britain leaves. I think the remaining EU 27 will not be able to get a meaningful, collective, supranational countercyclical facility on board. So it will have to be done by the sum of the individual national actions of the 27 member states. And there is, fortunately, quite a bit of fiscal elbow room, especially north of the Rhine. I mean, the Germans have fiscal space coming out of their ears. It's only this emotional attachment to the black zero, no deficit conventions and rules that keeps them from being expansionary already. But I expect that with Germany now showing signs of slowing down materially, that there will be, with the right labeling, some non-trivial fiscal stimulus in Germany before too long. That would probably take the form of environment-friendly outlays and public sector capital investment expenditures. And it will not even be presented as fiscal stimulus, but rather as environmental or infrastructure needs meeting policies. But the impact will also be cyclical and therefore welcome. Other smaller countries like the Netherlands have fiscal room, which they, I think, will get around to using once the circumstances deteriorate. It would be great to have the fiscal stimulus now, anticipating the slowdown, but I don't think the politics are ready for that.
I think that's another key debate here, is whether you should bring in these reforms before a crisis and the political appetite to do so, rather than to bring in the reforms when perhaps it's too late following a crisis. I think that that's a really interesting way of a kind of it being packaged and readdressed within Germany around meeting infrastructure needs and sustainability. What do you think, how likely do you feel that is? And also, is it just the infrastructure needs as well? Is there other fiscal policies that could be brought in that you think that are needed to avoid such a recession?
Well, in Germany, the fiscal space is there. There are non-cyclical reasons in Germany for engaging in infrastructure investment. The German infrastructure is not what it looked like 20 or 30 years ago. There has been a persistent neglect outside the former East Germany in German infrastructure investment, which is therefore desirable for structural supply side reasons, efficiency reasons, as well as for cyclical reasons. In fact, in much of Europe, there is a supply side argument for engaging in intelligently designed infrastructure spending and sustainability oriented, environmentally supported spending. The fiscal stabilization arguments at the moment are not yet carrying enough weight. And the counter-cyclical stimulus reason for providing stimulus in Italy, in France, as well as in Germany, the Netherlands, and other countries, the counter-cyclical argument has to be hidden behind a supply-side-oriented, longer-term virtuous piece of window dressing. That's unfortunate, but that's where we are in Europe. There is no readiness to act for cyclical reasons alone, at least not until we actually do see a further material slowdown. And we are not there yet in Germany. Anticipating the need for fiscal action and acting before the actual slowdown materializes in a significant way is something that would be highly desirable, but is unfortunately, for political reasons, extremely unlikely.
Yeah, I think that's a very very good summary, if not slightly concerning, because obviously we would all hope that we can take these fiscal policies forward before a crisis. But I think the EU elections, the European elections earlier this year showed a continuation of the rise of populism. So that's definitely a political concern as well. One of the things I did want to touch on is that also there has been talk within deepening a capital markets union in Europe, and it would be interesting to hear what lessons Europe can learn from the US, who obviously has very deep capital market access. I think that the UK was very much forward in driving this, but Germany, the Netherlands and France have made noises, strong noises, of taking this forward, even without the UK within the new makeup of the Commission. Do you see that this, alongside perhaps a banking union, could be a way of bringing us closer towards the fiscal moves that we need, but without the political baggage? Or do you see that this is again a non-starter?
No, I think progress on both banking union and on capital market union is definitely still possible. Capital market integration has been the stepchild of European integration. You still have 27 or 28, UK still in there technically, national capital markets and financial markets rather than a single EU or Euro area financial market. And progress, I think, will be made there because everybody recognizes that financial intermediation in Europe is over-concentrated on the banking sector, and that we have to move more in the direction of the American model, where a much larger share of financial intermediation goes through the capital markets. And I think there is a real material prospect of that happening. But in and of itself, these measures of deepening capital market integration and banking sector integration are positive supply side measures. They don't directly boost aggregate demand, although if they do boost pessimism, optimism and confidence in the European integration process, it may also pay off on the demand side. So I think this is something that we should be expecting. It will be gradual, it will be slow, but there will be some progress there. But it's not a substitute in terms of countercyclical stimulus for a fiscal relaxation throughout the Eurozone, supported by more aggressive open market purchases by the ECB through its QE operations.
So some hope there. My final question, which is a big one, is: do you think a recession is likely? And if so, do you think it will come from, and what might happen? If not, how do you think it will be avoided?
Well, a slowdown is certainly likely. Continued slowdown in Europe, including the UK, unless we have a Brexit miracle there, some further slowdown in the US and slowdown in China and other emerging markets. But whether it will amount to a global recession, in other words, in the advanced economies, at least 2 quarters of consecutive negative GDP growth, that's not so clear. I do anticipate enough of a weakening of growth and employment expansion, however, to warrant these countercyclical measures, both monetary, which we are getting, but which are subject to severely diminishing returns, and fiscal, which we had in the US when it wasn't needed, early 2018, and which we should be having in the UK, in Europe, including the UK, should Brexit turn out to be painful, but which is not yet forthcoming. So I think the slowdown will happen. It will partly be imported from a slowing down external environment, China and other emerging markets, but part of it will simply be a lack of animal spirits in the advanced economies. In the US, consumer demand, household demand, is still pretty robust and will keep GDP ticking over at roughly potential output growth rate for the rest of this year. But it's hard not to anticipate some further slowdown next year, maybe not into technical recession territory, but certainly in territory where additional stimulus, fiscal and monetary, will be called for.
One of the things that you did bring up there, which we haven't spoken about, is the impacts of China. I know that we spoke about the impacts of the US-China trade conflict, but even China in itself and China seeing a potential slowdown and its relationship to the rest of the world and kind of the wider impact that that might have on the euro area and indeed the US as well, just a global shift. Do you think that that is likely? Do you think that the China's forecasts are as strong or potentially as weak as there is suggestion? I know that there's different opinions about.
Well, China clearly is the country most directly impacted by the US-inspired trade conflict. But even apart from that, I think we should be expecting material, gradual slowdown in Chinese growth. They're going through tremendous structural changes. There's an excessive debt problem, which is really taking on epic proportions now. And while the government, when the economy threatens to slow down excessively, still pulls out the fiscal stops to counter such slowdowns, its ability to act in an aggressively countercyclical manner will be diminished by this growing excessive public debt problem that they have. The country is rebalancing from externally led growth to domestic demand led growth, from capital expenditure led growth to consumption growth, from physical goods driven growth to services growth, and from I can't breathe growth to green growth. And these processes, while desirable and important and positive from a longer run supply side perspective, almost invariably lead to cyclical slowdown. So I would expect to see, even without the additional pain from the trade conflicts, a non-trivial slowdown in Chinese economic activity in the years to come. And the trade pain is on top of that. So I do not expect that China will be the cyclical rescue brigade for the global economy in the rest of this year or next.
Potentially making the fiscal stimulus within the euro area all the more needed. So I want to thank you very much for joining us. It has been great to speak to you on the key implications of the euro area slowdown and the assessments that you've made on we'll be lucky if the slowdown will be as low as perhaps the ECB have forecasted, unless we get good policy responses. So these policy responses are both the expansion of monetary policy, which hasn't potentially run out of road, but to be its most effective has to be side by side with fiscal stimulation and fiscal policies, which there is elbow room for, especially within Germany, but that this might politically have to be couched within a focus on sustainability and supply-led infrastructure investment. And then we've also spoken about the banking union and the capital markets integration within the euro area and how those conversations will still progress, potentially quite slowly, but that actually they themselves are a positive on the supply side. And if they boost optimism, then there could be a ricocheting into the demand side, taking us actually sort of full circle back to the conversation we had at the start of this podcast around the importance of optimism and actually lack of uncertainty in boosting the economies and how needed that will be if we're looking at also a China slowdown and a US trade dispute with Europe. Is that a fair summary? Do you have anything you would want to add to my kind of overview of the conversation we've had, which has been terribly interesting?
No, this is a fair summary. I do think that should there be a just a final thought on Brexit, should there be a hard Brexit, you're undoubtedly going to see those monetary and fiscal stimulus in the UK. So the institutional and political ability to deliver stimulus is present in the UK, which is a measure of good news next to all the doom and gloom about Brexit.
Always good to end it on a good, on a high, on a good news point. I think that's very important. So thank you so much again for joining us. And thank you all
Thank
for
you.
listening. Thank you. And thank you for listening to everyone as well. If you've enjoyed the program, then please do leave us your comments. And if you have any thoughts on the program as well, also leave your comments. And please do follow us on our OnPath channel. We are now on iTunes and Spotify. We release podcasts every Tuesday. Thank you.